Anybody got anything you want to ask or pull in from the last session before we go on this one? Yeah, right here.
Wayne, this actually touches back to last night's discussion, but it all sort of rolls in together. The book, The Shack, and the impact that it's had on so many people's lives and trying to get them to kind of take a second take on our relationship with God and Christ and the struggles that we involve. Has there been any discussion about trying to open that up to a broader audience who, you know, maybe fall somewhere outside of the Christian dynamic? Because it seems to me that, and as parents and as spouses, one of the problems that we come up against a lot, and I think it's a very American thing, is that we focus so much on the external. Everything's about, you know, what, you know, who's driving what and who's dating who and who has the biggest house. And, you know, I just think we're becoming a little bit superfluous in terms of what we're really spending our time and energies on.
Sure.
And I think there's a really universal message in that and in the fact that it's a work of fiction. I mean, the Dalai Lama's book sold very well to many people who were not Buddhists. But I haven't really heard from some of my non-Christian friends. Like, they have absolutely no awareness that this book even exists. So, you know, do you think that there's a need for that? And, you know, are we really hungry for a little bit more nurturing for our insides?
Okay. You want to take that, Sarah? You know, the book has sold equally well among the Christian community as had the world community. So, I mean, we've sold 10 million shacks worldwide, and it has resonated. We get lots of email from self-professed atheists and other kinds of faith who are saying, you know, if I thought the God of Christianity was this God, I'd want to follow him. You're right, most people don't have that view of God, which is why that book was somewhat controversial in some places. What I loved about The Shack, and kind of really feeds into what we want to talk about this afternoon with y'all, is The Shack was the first book I had ever read, even in its original form, that set theology inside a relationship. I think the reason we become superficial people, and the reason sometimes why even our religion becomes superficial, it becomes about outward acts of righteousness and not an inner transformation, is because we've not seen the life of God is inside a relationship. We're seeing it outside of a relationship. And that is really the first mistake in the garden. Adam and Eve see the relationship, see their knowledge of good and evil coming outside of a relationship with the God who made them. So already from the beginning, it is we can do this on our own. And I think religion often becomes, even Christianity as religion, becomes we can do this on our own. Even marriage, we're going to talk about marriage today as we are. We can do this on our own. We can learn some better principles. We can apply that. We can have a happier marriage. And the fact is, that's true. You can learn some principles and treat each other better and have a happier marriage by just putting a little bit of human effort into it. You can. But the kind of journey we want to talk about, the kind of thing that takes us beyond the superficiality of just our own wants or our perceived needs or whatever, is to engage this relationship with the Father that begins to win you out of those other places. To me, that's the miracle of the Shack story, is God doesn't really, Papa doesn't really answer Mac's big question. He builds a relationship with Mac that's bigger than the question. And I think that's what God does with us. There's so much that I think God would love to explain to us, but we just can't see it from here. We're just finite human beings lost in a broken planet. And so if God tried to explain to us, someone described to me the other day, they were driving along and their 4-year-old daughter was in the back of the car and she was looking out the back hatchback window. And it looked like, as you drive, it looks like the moon was following. So she said, "Dad, why is the moon chasing us?" And the dad's a science teacher. So he goes through the whole explanation of the optical illusion of rotating bodies and moving cars and trees and perspectives and all this kind of stuff. He explains it to her and she goes, "Okay, Dad, but why is the moon following us?" And she didn't get any of it. He just finally said, because the moon likes us. And she said, great. And now he feels like when he's wrestling with these really deep questions with God, he gets this little wondering in the back of my mind. God just says, because the moon likes to follow you. And it's like, you couldn't get it if I tried to explain it to you. But inside a relationship of affection, those things begin to move in our lives. I think we end up the way we do when we're broken or captivated by sin or distracted by the world. We end up the way we do because we haven't got something larger that's captured us. This relationship with God, as obscure as it feels at times, is like Paul said, looks through a glass darkly. But we get to, as Paul's other language, behold him with unveiled face and be transformed from increasing glory to increasing glory. What makes this marriage work at this point in our journey, I think for Sarah and I, is that we have found a resonance deeply in who the Father is in both of our lives. Neither one of us are perfect at that stage of the journey. But we're on a spiritual journey. And I guess I would want us to know, I think we kind of explained this a little bit last time. It's not really why I wanted to have this flip chart, but you guys can't see it over there, can you? Is that a little better? Is that in our marriage, don't you love it when the pins work well? Let me try this one. There are three journeys we're dealing with in our marriage. Sarah has her journey. There's Sarah's journey. There's Wayne's journey. I got the Y in the wrong place, but I never signed my name, so I don't know how to do that. And then there's this our journey. I think sometimes in marriage, particularly the traditions I came from, there was a sense of when you get married, now you're one, so you just have a journey. And you've got to agree on everything and do everything you do together and try and, you know, whatever spiritual life you have, whatever things you like, whatever, it all ought to be the same. And there's this pressure to conformity inside a marriage. One of the things that's been most meaningful through Sarah's bit of this journey, because we lived like this was the whole journey. And then we came to realize, no, in this marriage, Sarah has her own spiritual journey. I have my own spiritual journey. To the degree that those journeys overlap, we get to have a shared journey. But they don't always. Sarah goes through her bit of transformation time. And we're not on the same page about a whole lot of things. And things are not working out the way I would want them to work out. I'm having to back up and say, okay, Sarah is not on my journey. So this is not our journey. So now my job is, how do I become the best cheerleader for Sarah's journey? And that's particularly true. It's what we want to talk about this session. What do we do when we don't agree? Where do we find unity when we are seeing things differently? Is the goal, I must get Sarah to think like I think? Or I must pretend that I think the way she thinks? But how do we have let her have a journey? And this is particularly true if your spouse is not even a believer, in the sense that they may not even have a spiritual journey. How do I become a cheerleader for them and their life? Obviously not when it's abusive. Obviously not when they're cheating on you. Obviously not in those things. But just a champion for what God might be doing in them to make Himself known, even if they're unaware of it or unseeking of it. Does that make sense? And I think it helps to look at it instead of, we've all got to combine everything here. No, if Sarah's journey and my journey, where it overlaps, our marriage gets a journey. And this is what we've enjoyed, I think, the last 15 years, I would say more than anything. We still have these journeys. I mean, Sarah's relationship with God is very different than the way I relate to God. We see things differently. That's the joy of the multifaceted wonder of God being made known to the church, as we all get different glimpses of who He is. And if we don't use that as the point of our division, if we use it as the point of, gosh, what do you know that I don't know? And then we're combining our wisdom. Then this becomes our marriage journey. And all three of these journeys are going on simultaneously, is what I'm trying to say, if that makes sense. And then I wanted to take you to this passage of Scripture and diagram one other thing. See's better. You keep the good stuff in your office, don't you? I used to do that too. I can relate to that. And the Scriptures I've used today, not necessarily marriage Scriptures, and yet I think marriage, this relationship is the first brother-sister relationship that I get to experience in the body of Christ. This is the first one. This is primacy over the others. Sarah said something over lunch. I wish you'd repeat that. He talked about when you got through this transition, with the folks we were having lunch with, you realize you were still a wife, still a mother, but something else. Why don't you talk about that a minute?
Well, through this process, I talked to several people. During this process, and a large part of the process, I think, and growing up, and I realized that I'm a wife, I'm a mom, and I'm a grandma. I always will be that. But I think in the process and in going through all that, tearing down all the defense mechanisms in me or whatever God ended up doing, and the realization that I am those, I always will be those. But my purpose and my identity and who Sarah is that I'm first a daughter of my Heavenly Father. And that besides being a wife, a mom, and a grandma, that I have purpose, my identity is in Him, and that there is a reason that I was and am on placed on this earth. And so in that, I live in that, that I am that. I have purpose, but my identity is not in being a wife and a mom and a grandma. And I think that so many women, our identity does come into that, and that's where that process is. I learned, that's where I came. And I think in the belief in myself being a daughter, and for the guys, it would be your sons of a Heavenly Father.
Yeah, almost every wedding ceremony I've done in my life, I've always said to the couple when they're getting married, before you're ever his wife, you're God's daughter. And to the husband, don't you ever forget that. You live with the daughter of the King. Treat her as God's child first. And I would say then to the wife, the husband, the same thing. Before you're ever her husband, you are a son of the Most High. Live like that and treat each other like that. Because the one marriage, somebody says, you notice no one ever falls out of love with their dog. And you go, that's true. You get a dog, you mostly hang with it forever, unless it's obnoxious. We've known a few people take their dogs to the pound, and they're not Sarah's favorite humans on the planet, because Sarah's dogs first, people second. Her whole life goes that way. But
not
no one ever falls out of love with their dog. Not, what? Now, are you being smarty back here? Don't make me come back there again. So no one ever falls out of love with their dog, but then why do we fall out of love with that person we most cherish? I love the word you used earlier today, Jeff, cherish. Because one of the things in our journey, about 5-6 years into this marriage, and we were going through a deal, and I'm going, gosh, you know, this marriage was not as fun as it used to be. And I was brought back to my wedding vows. And we always think of the wedding vows as, yes, I promise sexual purity to my wife, or, you know, that's what we think the vows are. In my vows, which Sarah and I wrote, I promised to cherish her all the days of my life. And the question I was asking myself was, what am I doing today that lets Sarah know she's cherished? And I wasn't. Because we'd begun to take each other for granted. Now each other's in the way of the thing we want. And that conflict begins to set in. And then we see the marriage as a contest of power. Who has the power to get what they want or withhold what they don't want to give? And that sets up for the kind of conflict that destroys marriages. Paul writes these words, and he writes them to the church at Philippi in chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. I love the way he expresses this. Here's a congregation. This is not even a marriage. This is just a brothers and sisters who are not getting along so good anymore. So he writes to him and he says this, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, any, not tons, not buckets full, if you have any encouragement from the fact that she's being united with Christ and I'm being united with Christ, if we're going to put it in the marriage context, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if you have any sense that the Holy Spirit is at work in you to make the will of God known and unfold, any, not even a lot, just any. And then if you have any tenderness and compassion, again, not a lot, just this is the woman you married. Is there any tenderness, even when she's not doing what you want her to do? Is there any tenderness about what her journey might be, where she might be lost, where she's struggling? Is there any tenderness and compassion for what's going on in here? And then finally, if there is, that was the finally. Then he goes, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. And each of you should look out not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. I think this is a great marriage text right here. This is what begins to move from my journey and her journey into our journey. How am I putting her interests alongside my own? If there's any hope that God can take us beyond, that we talked about this morning, this mutual accommodation of self-need, and how much power I have to get what I want, if I withhold sex, can I get him to do X, Y, or Z? If I do this, can I get her to do that? And that's most marriages are destroyed on the altar of power and the demand to get what I want, and how much I manipulate the person, and how much a person is manipulatable. And you may, in the short term, get what you want because you've got the power to manipulate your partner. But in the long run, what you're breeding is a resentment that will destroy the relationship. The shack, I think the Bible, I think there's a lot of things that have asking us to rethink post the fall, where we've divided our society up into powerful and powerless. And I manipulate power or try to achieve power to get what I want, to how it is that we grow out of, through the transformation of Christ, the brokering of power, and get to a place of mutual relationship where I put others' needs above my own. And I live. And he goes on to say, your attitude should be that which was the same in Christ Jesus. And then he goes through this incredible passage of regarding his rights not to withhold his own, his rights to godhood and laying it down, and being born a servant and serving. And boy, if you don't have that inside a relationship, if the relationship is all about negotiating our wants, at times at the other's expense, then we're undermining the very relationship we hope's growing. When I said only in all ways earlier today, I don't think the goal of God is that you stay married till you die. Because I know people who've celebrated 40, 50, 60 anniversaries that are just coexisting together. They've negotiated power enough that they're just sticking it out for the kids or for whatever. Nobody's truly happy. This is not a journey that they delight in. It's not when I'm driving home, my heart is aflutter with the fact that I'm going to get to see Sarah again and we're going to catch up for the day. Maybe not the first half hour. I like that. I don't always want to. Sarah's always been great. I'd be gone 2 or 3 weeks. And I'll show up home from a trip and this girl, to my joy and her credit, does not badger me for all the details. She knows over the next few days we'll have conversations that will catch her up with the whole of my trip. She just knows that. And she's pretty good about letting it come out. Because what she's learned is it's better when it comes out in my time than when it comes out in hers. She's drilling down for the data and I'm exhausted from a 27-hour flight home from somewhere. We're not going to have a great conversation anyway. And part of that's mutuality. How do we get to a journey? How do we get this? And here's the encouragement. If there's any encouragement from being united with Christ, if there's any tenderness and compassion, there's just anything that says God's alive in us. And if he's not alive in both of us, if one of the partners is not on this journey, there's a lot in 1 Peter and other places where you can support your partner's journey or God's work in your partner without badgering them, trying to evangelize them, or anything else that's not helpful to the process. And I could talk about a lot of factors in marriage, and I haven't really got cute terms for these because we don't do a lot of marriage seminars, but I'm going to try and talk to you about something that's in my head, and I honestly don't know if it's actually going to come out on this chart. But here's Sarah, and here's me, or here's you and your spouse. Inside, I want to kind of just talk in terms of three areas. There's my preferences. You know, I like the Green Bay Packers. Sarah likes the Ohio, or I like the USC Trojans. Sarah likes the Ohio State Buckeyes. That's preferences. I don't hate her for her preferences. I'm not going to try and change those preferences.
Thank you.
Smart aleck. Then there's our wants. I mean really wants. Okay? The really, really wants. You know, how many kids I want? What kind of life we want to have together? Where do we spend our time? The kind of wants that really shape a journey. And it's going to be helpful if you have some similar wants, right? These gotta be important. And then there's this, and I haven't got a good term for this. So I'm just going to use the term violates. There's things that in a person's life, if I were to do something maybe Sarah even wants me to do, or me her, it violates something in here that causes a wound or causes damage. Many people have gotten married not knowing that their potential spouse or spouse had had some kind of sexual abuse in their past. And on the honeymoon night, and I was a pastor, I've heard this a lot. Get to the honeymoon night, and now one of the partners isn't even though they may have made out like a dog in heat when they were dating. Suddenly, sex to them is repulsive and repugnant, and it triggers some repressed memories, and it becomes a horrible thing inside. So now what we do sexually, how we do it, becomes a violation of that person. And yet this person's wants may also overlap with what violates. You got the same here. What really wants, preferences, and what violates. And in sharing a journey together, how Sarah and I have talked about this, and these are not rules you can go home and apply. This is a relationship is more undefined than how your car works. Can't take it to a mechanic and say, oh, I just need to fix this or plug that in there or do whatever. The relationship is aligning. As Sarah said earlier this morning, it's ever-changing, isn't it? The relationship is always changing. Because we're changing, life is changing, what life's throwing at us is different. We all have these things in our heart. And where the marriage thrives is where those things overlap. Where my wants, my really wants, overlap with Sarah's really wants. Does that make sense? So these two, and I think this is what happens over the course of a marriage. We start here, and I know when we first get married, we just, you know, the whole compatibility thing, we're just sure, hey, we want everything we want together, and we really communicated very clearly. And about the second, third year, you realize either we didn't communicate all that clearly, or we just didn't know what we were dealing with, and how different we might be, and how different the things we want. The marriage begins to thrive inside where these really wants and some of our preferences, but not necessarily all, begin to overlap. We enjoy doing things together. We have a similar passion about family, about how we're raising kids. Those things become more and more real in our life. And I think it's why I put the arrows here is because these, as we grow old together, hopefully, those things grow more together. The things that make us feel violated for whatever reason, past hurts, just things that I wasn't raised to want or do or be a part of. Hopefully, if we're on a spiritual journey, these are being eaten up by the Lord's work in our life, not the demand of a partner. That makes sense. So that hopefully as this grows smaller through healing, through God's work in our lives, this has a tendency to expand. Now, it may never get here. I don't think we're supposed to be one about everything we do. If she likes chick flicks I don't like and has chicks to go to it, great. I like playing around to golf with the guys. A few years ago, Sarah thought, it'd be a great idea. Maybe we could play golf together. Sarah took some golf lessons. We played one round of golf together and decided we would never do that again. One, she hated
it. Sold my clubs.
Sold her clubs and stopped her lessons. And it was a friend of hers did it. We were couples. We thought, hey, this would be all fun. We'll all four go out as couples. We almost killed the women in a two-hour deal on a par 3 golf course. They almost killed us when it was over. And we decided, you know what? Golf doesn't need to be part of our life together. Plus, Sarah hated. Sarah could think, I can think of a million things I'd rather do than hit this stupid little white ball over this grass for a couple of hours. So there may be movie differences. There may be just ways you engage life. The joy of the marriage is that more and more, as God shapes me, and more as I love this amalgamation of what Sarah is, the more I want her wants to be my wants. That's what that love is, laying down your life for each other. Love is not, let's negotiate an agreement together. It's, I want to want what she wants. The best things in our marriage is not when Sarah gives me what I want, is not when I give Sarah what she wants. Those are great moments of love, and they're valuable in a marriage as well. The greatest moments of love are when Sarah and I are both doing what we both want, and it's the same thing. That's not every day, every event. It's not close to that. But the best points of marriage are the things we love to do together. And no one ever asked in the marriage to violate that place in their heart that gets violated, that feels somehow I'm being manipulated beyond something I'm choosing to do. And I think the only way to live this and I'm going to let Sarah, you got some stuff on this? You want, not at all? You're just going to sit there and smile. You're so beautiful. I like you. And the only way this is going to grow is if we're on spiritual journeys where this is being shaped in us. That I really want, I want to find a way to want what she wants. Not everything, because I'm never going to root for the Ohio State Buckeyes unless they're playing against Oregon. And I did root for them this year, but mostly I don't. You know, if she was a Minnesota fan, it'd even be worse, because I'm a Packer owner, and that doesn't work well. I own 1/5 millionth of the Green Bay Packers, by the way, which makes me more than a fan. But and now Brett Favre's over there, so that was really disgusting. The whole season it's been disgusting. So thank God for the Saints. Take Brett out of that. Okay? But letting God, as 34 years into this journey now, the things we want together, the things we want in our sexual expression together, the things we want about how we relate to our kids and how we spend our free time, as those, not just, I'll do what you want and you do what I want. Some days that's fine. Laying down your life, doing something your partner wants just because they want it is a great thing. But the joy of the journey is watching God bring these things together. I'm not ever looking for a total overlap here. We're human after all. She's never going to like the USC Trojans. But she hates them with a passion because they've beaten Ohio State most of the time.
True.
Yeah, nice. Oh, sorry. So it's not every preference is going to be there. But the joy in marriage, I would rather go to a movie with that woman than anybody else on the planet. I'd rather have a conversation about what's going on. Sarah's not the most intellectual person in my life. In fact, there's a lot of...
Thank you.
She's the most intelligent person in my life. Did I say that? She's the most intelligent person in my life. No, she's not. There's a lot of intellectual, theological dialogues that Sarah's not interested in.
Nope.
I've got friends that I get down and have those theological discussions with, and I love that. But I would rather talk about anything with Sarah than anyone else. And that, to me, that wasn't always true. That's the growing edge of this. Watching Jesus change Sarah and knowing that He was at work to change me and move some of these things around. So there's less areas of my life that I feel violated by or I feel manipulated into. There's less of that because God's touched things in my life. There's less of that in Sarah. That gives us more room to find this, what you want and what I want, and neither of us asked to give up what violates something deep in our conscience. Make sense?
Can I give an example of something in this that shows how we can help each other? Because I think it's wonderful when we know what we each like. He likes golfing. He likes conversations, theological conversations. He likes, there's things that he likes, and letting him have the space and freedom to be able to participate in those and try and find some way sometimes that can happen for him. For me, one of the big things is gardening, and I love to garden. We used to have one years ago when he didn't understand that I really enjoy gardening so much. He kind of had a rule saying that we're supposed at Saturday by noon. Everything was, we're supposed to be done outside, because everything done outside. So
By noon.
So when we come in Saturday afternoon, if I'm outside, he would feel guilty. If I was out working, and I would try and tell him I'm enjoying it, but it took him a long time to really try and get that through his head, that I really enjoyed that. It was something that I enjoyed being in outside gardening. And we recently have, last year, moved to this piece of property, and he, knowing that I always have wanted to have an English garden, and I just love being with flowers and working. And with that, even though he doesn't like that, to him, gardening is just work. He doesn't understand it, but that's okay. He knows that I'm having fun outside. And he participated in with someone else and was key in designing a garden for me. And all different types of aspects in it, you know, the watering and the design, building the, because we have rabbits, we had to put a fence up so the rabbits won't get in, eat all my flowers. And so, I mean, that was really special, because that was a gift from him for me. And, you know, I go out there, that's my own little space. He calls it my playpen.
You have to tell him everything.
But that's where he doesn't want to be out there. I don't ask him to come out there. I really don't want him out there, you know.
Now the truth be told.
In my garden. But that's the thing where he knows how important that is to me. And he was a part in creating that for me to allow that happen. And, you know, and I can do the same thing for him, you know, trying to find if he's golfing or, you know, wanting a different clubs or wanting to go with some guys to go on a trip or to do things. Finding things that we enjoy that we aren't together, but realizing, you know, they like that and wanting to be a part of that or letting that happen. And so that's just one example.
Yeah, and that grows into a reality. If you always want to be apart from your partner doing things you enjoy, that's not going to help your marriage. There's that balance, and that I like to liken it to a dance, the dance of two people, bodies moving together and figuring out, you know, and it's more fluid and less thought out when it becomes a natural rhythm of life between you. And I think time buys that. I think years buy that. If you're people who let God keep shaping your life, each of you have a journey spiritually. And then you also have this journey together of what is God asking of our life and marriage. And there's a time Sarah went through some real burnout with hospitality just because we had so many people through our home for so many years doing so many things. She was burned out for 4 or 5 years. We hardly had anybody over to do anything. Or if we did, I said, I'll wash all the sheets and make the bed back up in the guest room just because I don't want you to get burned out on that. And learning to find that space of walking together through the most mundane at times and also through the most profound, and to have somehow a healthy mix of things we might enjoy doing separately, but most things we enjoy doing together. And I don't do things separately to get away from her. They're just things I enjoy that she doesn't. I grew up on a farm, so garden work to me is work. You go out there and get rid of weeds. You got to cut stuff, trim stuff, prune stuff. I did that growing up as a little kid, all my whole life. I'd prune grapevines during Christmas vacation. I wanted a Saturday afternoon that I could, you know, watch golf or a college football game and not, you know, my wife's out there working. I should be helping her because that's the worst thing in the world to do is garden. It took us a number of years to communicate through the fact that I really love that. Let me love that. And part of that comes because I walked out in her garden one day and she was working in her garden in near tears just because she loves this place. She just loves this space. And when your heart is happy, when that heart is happy, that's where those wants begin to emerge. And it's not just about what I want. I want her happy. One of my biggest wants is I want her to be fulfilled. Things we're doing together, I don't want her doing them because, well, okay, I should. I'm trying to be a good wife. I want her there wholeheartedly engaged because this is good for her too. That is, I think, the harder work of marriage. That's years of learning each other's rhythms, growing through the child-raising years and tiredness and learning to find where is that space where we are completely one. We both enjoy this together. That's the best space in marriage. Then there's that space where we have different preferences about some things. And that's just cool. She wants to go sew for a while and I want to go read. It's all good. And keep finding that rhythm where God makes Himself known with us.
You like music, I don't.
Yeah, I like music. What are you talking about? There you go, yeah. She always wants the music on. I usually shut it off when I come in the room. It's hilarious. But actually, what makes our marriage work, you want the honest truth? We made a rule about 10 years ago that we would never touch the same piece of furniture at the same time to move it. Because we could never move a front piece of furniture without trying to kill each other. Because I have the right way of moving furniture, and she has the wrong way of moving furniture, and she just will not yield. So, yeah. Yeah. Two biggest fights in this marriage came over snorkeling in Hawaii and asking directions in Washington, D.C. And they were huge. They scared our kids to death. Such trivial things. She would not put her face in the water to see this beautiful... I got snorkels, goggles. We go into the water, waist high. Sarah has a fear of putting her face in the water. And I was going to conquer that fear for her on that day. And it was not good. It was... Honey, you don't know what you're missing. And she's, I don't care what I'm missing. I'm gonna. That whole idea that we can make somebody enjoy what we enjoy is nuts. Because that's a very good example of one of those things where she felt violated. It's a fear. It's an unnatural fear, but she doesn't like having her face in the water. I don't care how pretty it is. Even though years later, you actually did go snorkeling and put your face in the water. But that's some of that. learning to move with each other's rhythm, learning to let God shape our partner. If God's meeting my needs, I don't have to get Sarah to meet my needs. I can let God meet them. And as God shapes her, and I tell you this about anybody, you know, people around you change faster when you give them the freedom not to than they ever do when you're forcing them to. And that's not always true. There are abusive personalities that if you give them maximum latitude, they're going to take advantage of it and just use you. I'm not talking about that. That's a different problem. And a couple needs to sit down and say, look, I'm trying to care about what you care about. I'm trying to love you and work with you. You're abusing it. And you're violating something deep in me. And if you can't work it out together, you get some help on it. You get a counselor. You get some older brother and sister in the body of Christ who've been through it. And you work through where people feel violated because it's always got to be my way or the highway. That's an unhealthy way to relate. Does that make sense? I know we threw a lot at you. We're going to give you some Q&A. Were you going to say something?
Well, I was just wanting to say something about you get married. Well, at least we got married when we were right out of college. And then you get the kids. And then as the kids get older, I mean, the marriage, the relationship changes, the dynamics change, you know, when as you go through different cycles, especially when you have young kids, exhausting, and then they get into older kids, and then after that you get out to where they then empty house, and then you go into grandkids. And so there's a time where the marriage relationship is changing all through that. Especially one thing, there's a lot of young couples here. When we were young and we had the kids and they were in before we could just leave them home, really the parenting is very important. I love our kids dearly. But there is an importance, and I see this with young people, to make sure that your marriage was first when you have young kids. And really you need to nurture that. Really good to nurture. We usually tried once a month to have a date night. We had to have the kids go and have that time. Because it is exhausting. They're tiring, they're beautiful, wonderful part of your life, but they are very tiring to take care of at times. And it's just good, I think, to have family nights where you have, you know, the family together. But it is also good and important to remember that you guys were first, and you really have to keep this, keep the romance going and the love going.
Good. Well, we talked right through your Q&A time, so we're done. Yeah? Couple questions? Are there some questions you have to ask that would help make sense of this? Anybody? Quickly? If not? Oh, cool. See, you did such a good job of explaining it. We're done. Nobody? Cool. I hope that helps. That's part of our journey anyway. And it has led us to a space now, I think, where Sarah and I, if it gets better than this, we don't know how. We truly, truly enjoy every day. And my travel at times when we're not together makes me, I told people, I don't think I've taken her for granted one day in the last 15 years. I just haven't. I know how much I miss her when I'm on the road. And when I'm home, even when little things come up, you might make a big deal over if we're going to be together every day for the rest of our lives. And now it's like, since we're not, it's not worth fighting over. It's not worth even raising a ruckus. It's just worth letting go. And so we're hopeful that you'll go on that kind of a journey as well, if you're not already on one, and find that growing sense of partnership and life and love together and be of one mind and one heart, by not because we agree about everything, but because in our relationship, it's not about how much power we can amass. It's what of my life can I lay down, and what part of yours you'll lay down so that we can find this usness together that we truly, truly love. So thank you. Thank you.